Skype's remarkably hissy today.
I have a fan running. Should I turn it off?
Do you need it to stay cool?
I could sit here naked.
Okay.
We are recording, so.
Not video recording.
No, no video, unfortunately. This is not Gun Nuts.
Oh. I've gone how many years on the Squirrel Port without that show being mentioned? And you just blew it.
I just blew it.
You did.
You know, that was the big selling point. Watch Breed on video.
I remember that. Watch her sit there and wait to be able to talk. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I look at the Squirrel Report website literally once a week, you know, to do the show.
Oh, like the actual website?
The actual website.
Okay.
And I'm doing a bunch of updates and stuff. And you know how you've been getting, like, everybody's been getting a flood of these, like, privacy notice and terms of service have changed and blah, blah, blah. But it's because of this GDPR thing, the Euro privacy, blah, 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 blah.
Okay.
So the blog edit thing says now there's a thing to help your site be compliant with GDPR and other laws requiring notification of tracking. We can display a notice to your users under your comment forms. This feature is disabled by default. However, if you or your audience is located in Europe, you need to turn it on. Well, okay. First off, fuck you, Europe.
Yes. Don't tell us what to do.
Yeah. Go ahead.
We fought that war.
Yeah. Go ahead and try to sue for violating your fucking rules. Second off, we don't allow comments. So
yeah, it doesn't matter anyway.
It doesn't matter.
We will happily pay a fine equal to the sum total of remuneration received.
Yeah.
If we don't comply.
I know. It just struck me as funny. We don't do anything in Europe. I mean, I know we have some people that download the show in Europe, but I don't even know what happens. If there's any tracking going on, it's certainly not me doing it. Because, you know, I don't give a fuck. That said, if you're worried about the Squirrel Report tracking your stuff.
Worry no more.
Yeah. So, everybody have
I'm
a
not
good,
worried.
Everybody have a good Memorial Day.
It was good.
It was uneventful.
Did you celebrate your holiday in the virtue signaling approved fashion of proper piety and mournfulness?
Yes.
We charred mammal flesh.
Yeah, okay.
So did I. I think that's a good, you know.
I get so sick of people every time Memorial Day rolls around, there's a flood of people on the face socials telling me how I'm supposed to celebrate Memorial Day, the proper way to celebrate it, the right way to do it. It's tiring.
Well, you know, there's virtue signaling on both sides, I believe.
Oh yeah.
You know. Oh, look at me! I'm so pious. I'm, you know, do whatever you want, and that's the whole point. Like Memorial Day, people fought and died for your right to do whatever the fuck you want. So go ahead and do whatever the fuck you want.
Yep.
And say, yay, and I'm American. I'm doing whatever the fuck I want.
I am 100% positive that if you could poll those people that died in the service of the country, and you ask them if they thought that grilling a steak and drinking beer was a good thing to do on Memorial Day, I bet you would get almost unanimous approval.
You'd probably get you know, a couple of drive a pickup truck and go swimming.
Yeah. You know?
No, I think Matthew Allen had a pretty good post about that. And we honor them by doing what we do.
Yeah.
You remember that it's them who give us, who help guard our freedom and enjoy those freedoms. Because when you don't, they go away. Just look at England.
Yeah, let's look at England, by the way.
You're welcome, Alan. Was, good. I lobbed up that volleyball for you to spike over the net.
Excellent segue.
We're good at segues.
Oh, crap. The bicycling thing. So apparently someone in London who is now, Brita, cover your ears for a minute. You know you remember the Monty Python skit about the Ministry of Silly Walks?
Yeah.
It's like that. There's apparently some sort of ministry of bicycling or something. And
yeah, apparently the Ministry of Silly Walks was only an exaggeration. It wasn't a complete utter fabrication.
So the Ministry of Bicycling has actually done a survey of some sort, and I'm not sure how they did it, but maybe who knows. But they have decided that the people who bicycle in London are too white and too male. So they want to I don't even know what the hell they want to do. Do they want to have like affirmative action for minority bicyclists? I mean,
there is a walking and cycling commissioner in London.
Yeah.
What? Oh my God.
Oh. They have commissioners like we have czars.
But I mean, so you have an activity that has almost virtually zero barriers to entry. I mean, yeah, you can spend a lot of money on a bicycle, but you can also get one for next to nothing. So, or in the case of people who live in London, steal one because,
yeah.
So the barriers to entry of this activity are extremely low. London is a very bicycle friendly city. They have freaking bike paths all over the place. So
that's because as Hayden told us, gasoline is $975,000 a gallon.
That's right. Yes, you would, it's more dear than gold, apparently. So the only reason that somebody that wasn't a white male wouldn't be on a bicycle is because they didn't fucking want to. So, I mean, how are you gonna, I'm drawing a complete blank on this whole thing. I mean, first off, how do you decide that the bicycle riding public is too white and too male? I mean, how is that even a thing? And then what are you going to do about it? Are you going to run PSAs to try to encourage more minorities to ride bicycles? I mean, are you going to go out and take bicycles away from white males until the gender and racial balance is attained? I mean,
maybe they'll make all the bikes pink.
Well, you know, it's kind of one of the things I thought of is a lot of these people in London are immigrants. Large part of the minority population in London is immigrants from other countries. Where a lot of them, a lot of them are from countries where a bicycle is a very common form of transportation. Could it be that they get to London and they go, fuck, thank God I don't have to ride a damn bicycle anymore? or maybe it's that only white males are dumb enough to put on spandex pants and ride around on bicycles. I don't know.
I think I have the solution.
We have the same problem here in the United States, though, right? With bicycling?
Oh, I think we have a completely different problem in the U.S.
What?
Well, we have militant bicyclists in the U.S.
Well, I know, but they're mostly men.
Oh, yeah.
A good point.
White men.
Yes.
Except in, you know, like cities where everybody kind of has a bike and whatever. Maybe that's the point in London. I don't know. Like, I don't know. I'm just, I read that story. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, let people do whatever they want. Like, if you don't want to ride a bike, don't ride a bike. Like, what? The whole concept is so strange to me.
Are you ready for this?
Yes.
They can take all the knives they've collected, melt them down into bicycles. Boom!
Oh, Jay.
Jay's a genius.
That's it. There you are. Distribute them on street corners. You know, minority and women first.
That's right.
Done. There you go. It's like the ultimate. I'm trying to figure out what we could call it. The, you know, from the metal to pedal. There you go. Oh, there you are. I'm an idea rat.
You should trademark that. Because they're going to London. The mayor of London's going to come to you and say, "Hey, man, we want to steal that." Wow.
Yes. Ministry of Cycling and Walking. And is there like the Ministry of Chewing Gum While Talking? Or
I bet, you know what? Maybe there might be a Rule 34 for ministries in England. It's like, if you can think of it, somebody's in charge of it. It's bizarre.
It just seems like they're not content with just controlling certain portions of your life. No, we want all of them. There's probably like a ministry of making sure people sleep the right way.
I'm not even going to Google that because I.
There might be. Just,
most afraid to find out we might be right.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know. The ministry of making sure you put your toilet paper on the roll the correct way.
In the ministry of putting the toilet seat down.
The ministry of flushing the toilet when you're done.
Yeah. I mean, come on. These things aren't going to do themselves.
That's right.
Well, the big news about, like, you know, what the fuck is going on in Great Britain this week. There's a gentleman called Tommy Robinson. Have you heard the story?
Vaguely. No?
Me? Just me? Okay, vaguely. So.
He's some sort of like free speech guy, right?
Yeah, he's a free speech guy. And, you know, God bless him, but that doesn't exist in England.
Nope.
Yeah. It only exists if you're saying the right thing that they, you know, if they feel you're saying the right things. But he was arrested for breaching the peace outside the court. He was outside a court, and I think he was like live stream on Facebook, and he was reporting on the case of one of those Muslim child rape grooming cases. Like, they arrested a bunch of Muslims, you know, for like child rape rings, and they groom children, and it's like a big thing in England now. They arrested him for probably broadcasting this or bringing it to light. He's very anti-Muslim, and he's, you know, his free speech, and he doesn't like immigration, and basically, you know, they don't like him because of what he believes. And he was arrested, and I think he had been jailed for 13 months or something for just speaking out about this case. And so as a result, you have people, I don't know much about British, you know, free speech things, but I saw videos about where there's like a square where you can go and have free speech there. And it just, I mean, it, remember when they had the free speech zones during the conventions?
Yeah, yeah. Like outside the Democrat convention.
Right.
But it's like four blocks away. And
right.
Because apparently you can't have free speech in the U.S. unless it's in a zone or something.
Right. So, but, I mean, there's like this whole movement of, and it, this Tommy Robinson guy is kind of has brought it to light. And I wish Hayden was here to speak on it. I don't know if he knows about it, but Speaker's Corner. That's what it's called, Speaker's Corner in London. And I don't know if this is like their designated zone where you're allowed to say whatever you want, but yeah. Anyway, you know, it's just another, Great Britain is just committing a very slow and embarrassing suicide at this point.
That seems crazy.
It's so sad. It is so sad. I'm watching right now, by the way, I'm watching a BBC series, and they have Victorian farm and they have Tudor monastery farm.
Oh, I love
it's all
those.
On you. Yeah, they're so good. And they're on YouTube if anybody want to watch them, and they're a BBC thing. And there's like Ruth Goodman and Peter Ginn and Alex Langlands. And they do like all these series of farm kind of experiments where they recreate Victorian farming and Tudor monastery farming and Edwardian era. And it's really interesting and really well done. But the series I'm watching right now is The Wartime Farm.
Well, I haven't seen that yet.
It's so good. And they are doing what happened during the war in Great Britain was they created a minister of agriculture in an agriculture department. And they basically the government took control over all the farms. And because they had to like double farm production during the war so that they could feed the people and feed the troops and create all this stuff. And they, you know, so it was kind of talking about what great, the entire country came together and they did all, they worked their asses off and, you know, and I think about what's going on, and while watching this, I've been thinking about like what they went through versus what's going on today. You know, the whole of the country got together and they said, okay, we're going to work our butts off and do this. And you know, they've considered it a patriotic duty to do this. You know, and there was lots of hardship and lots of, you know, they were hungry people. Like they got 2 pieces of bacon per week per person.
Oh my God.
Like, and they had all sorts of rationing and all sorts of, you know, plus on top of that, they had to double farm production and, you know, that sort of thing. So
I'm not sure England could fight a war now.
I don't know. They are in Afghanistan and they have helped us, you know, with the war on terror and stuff, but
not really the same thing. I mean, like, but I just, like a I World know. War II style, like, oh shit, we're going to get invaded, you know.
At the last I had heard, this may be apocryphal, but the English Navy has more admirals than ships. Which, there's a metaphor there.
At this point, I'm not so sure our Navy doesn't have more admirals than ships.
But yeah, I think they have one aircraft carrier, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
Used to rule the seas.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's inevitable. I mean, you know, the U.S. is gonna go through the same thing, and it's gonna be, you know, it's gonna be pretty painful for a lot of people when the U.S. is, you know, when we turn our back on the world and decide we're not going to be we're not going to police the rest of the world. We're just going to go fuck you. It's, you know, like all these other, like the European powers, you know, France used to be a huge power in Europe. Now they're like, fuck you, everybody. We're just worried about our own country. Germany's the same way. You know, it's England's the same way. It used to rule the world. And now they're like, you know, screw it.
So. Say what you will about France. They did sink the Rainbow Warrior. Rainbow ship. So, I got to give it, you know.
I was pretty impressed by that story that I read last week that talked about the French resistance and how when the Nazis came in to France, occupied France, and they said they took all the list of firearms, and they said, okay, turn in your firearms or we will shoot you. And they got less than a third out of some 3 million, little over 3 million rifles and shotguns and whatnot, and I think less than a million turned them in. So that was pretty interesting. So I think the big problem in France was the government, not the people, so to speak. Which makes me wonder what would happen here.
Mm.
You know, they did the turn in your bump stocks in where was it, New Jersey?
Right.
And they got zero.
Zero.
They got three in Massachusetts.
Three.
It's kind of like tipping a penny, you know? It's like
yeah.
It's like
yeah. It's a gesture.
Yeah.
Here you go.
Charlie Brown at Thanksgiving. I got a rock.
Yeah.
You know, we got three. They estimate there were 8,000 and they got three.
Right. Because if you had one, it's not a serial number device. So
yeah.
There's no proof that you had one.
I bought it 5 years ago and it sucked and I sold it 4.5 years ago. Prove right. I didn't.
Yeah, or you know, there's no they can't even prove you have one or right. even bought one. There's no tracking, no serial number, no nothing. So why would you turn one in? I mean, if you wanted to actually get rid of it, just throw it away.
Right.
You know, it didn't cost that much. And by turning it in, guess what? You get yourself on yet another list because I guarantee you they're keeping track of who turned them in.
Well, it's pretty easy when there's only three.
Yeah. All right. They're on your fucking microscope now. Everyone's name
fits on a post-it note. Like, okay.
We're watching you.
All of you. All three of you. You could literally have the meeting in a phone booth.
Oh, man. So,
yeah.
What?
Go ahead, Rita.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say we have our own insanity here in the U.S.,
Plenty of insanity.
Which insanity do you want to talk about first? The Starbucks?
Oh, Starbucks. I have a kind of a special place in my heart for this Starbucks story because I work in a public place. And granted, I work in a very small library in a small suburban Ohio Midwest lovely little town. You know what I mean? But I have heard horror stories about libraries in bigger towns with, you know, a more diverse culture. And I'm not talking racially. I'm talking about just generally more hobos and how bad that gets at libraries. And this is at libraries, you know, and libraries are like, you know, we really work to like include everybody and make everybody welcome and, you know, that sort of thing. But, you know, when you have a hobo washing his socks in the public restroom, you know, you got problems. And I really think that this is Starbucks, man. I mean, your coffee's not that good to keep, you know, little Sarah soccer mom coming in with her little tykes, you know, and dodging the hobos and, you know, having to step over hypodermic needles in the restroom.
Well, they already had a problem.
Their coffee's not that good.
Yeah, they already had a problem with people camping out there all day and using it as their office and, you know, occupying tables and stuff like that. Because, I mean, I've seen a lot of meetings taking place in Starbucks. I mean, and I've gone to a few in Starbucks. And, you know, I'm like, first off, why the hell would you want to meet somebody in Starbucks for any sort of business purpose? That seems ridiculous. I don't know. And like you say, their coffee's not that good.
No, it really is not. Jay, you drink coffee.
I cannot stand Starbucks.
It tastes like burnt tires. Yeah,
it's way
rubber. Holy crap. I don't understand the Starbucks thing. I just think it's a name brandy type craze.
It's like a trendy thing.
It must be. I don't know. I know that all of my cousins in Arizona are like Starbucks crazy. to the extent where one of my little cousins, she worked for Starbucks and she won some award for being like a really super, super good barista, you know, and all this, the family is like, yay. I don't know. I can't drink it. But on the other hand, and I wanted to bring this up today, especially because I have a library story.
Oh boy.
And it ties into the whole Starbucks thing.
I should come up with some Brita library story theme music or something.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so I have this guy who comes in and he comes in every day. And I'm not gonna say his name, but his name sounds like it's from fiction. It's really
Benedict Cumberbatch.
It's really strange like that. Anyway, so, and he's this big guy and he kind of looks like Santa Claus, but with like really long hair and long fingernails. And so he comes in every day. And one of the reasons he comes in every day is because we have free Wi-Fi. On the days that the library is closed, he goes to Lowe's and sits in their parking lot and steals their free Wi-Fi. He doesn't actually go to Lowe's. Yeah, but he's like one of those kind of like crazy guys. And we've asked him, like, why don't you get Wi-Fi at your house? You don't even have to pack up your stuff and come here in the library. You could just get Wi-Fi at your house. And he said that he is so embarrassed at the state of the inside of his house that he wouldn't even want the Wi-Fi guy to come in and install the Wi-Fi.
Oh, boy.
Right. Yeah. So he comes to the library instead.
So he knows he has a problem, but he just won't do anything about it.
Right. So every day and in the summertime, he will, when it starts getting, he's a big guy, like big guy. And he comes in and he's usually at the library before I am and standing outside the door at 9 a.m. waiting to get in. And he will stand outside the door and he is carrying four bags, like four kind of like little tote bags, two laptops, and a box fan. A box, his own personal box fan, because it's warm in the library in the morning because the air conditioning hasn't been on all night, so it takes a little bit of time to cool the building down. Anyway, so he comes in the morning, and this is... The box fan is kind of an upgrade from when he used to stand near a window with a golf umbrella to shield himself from the hot sun. And I put a stop to that because we cannot have some weirdo standing in the back of the library with an open umbrella. We just can't. And so he comes in with the box fan. Okay, fine. And usually he sits somewhere where I can't see the box fan or him. And so fine. I can ignore it. But today it was really hot in the library, and hot and humid and kind of having like a little, you know, heat wave, early heat wave. And it's pretty warm in the library this morning and kind of humid, like everything kind of felt damp and sticky and, you know, whatever. But right out of the gate, as he's walking past my desk, carrying his box fan and his two laptops and his four tote bags, he says, oh, I brought the big box fan today because it was so hot in here yesterday. I was like, oh, okay. You know, okay, good for you. You know, I've lost my ability to like be politely nice to him. And so my whole first hour of work was spent listening to him. He would have a thought about the heat situation in the library and come up and talk to me and then go back to his seat. And then he'd come up to me again and go back to his seat. And it was like this back and forth kind of all morning long situation. And at one point he came up and he said, if it's hot like this in the library every single morning, I'm not going to come in until 1 o'clock.
Okay.
Break my heart, buddy. Like, you know, by that time I've had enough coffee that like I don't want to murder you. But I'm heartbroken, sir. That, like,
don't throw me in that briar patch.
Did he think that was a real threat or something? You know, it's like, I'm not gonna come occupy your space because I mean, I've heard of this guy. I've heard you talk about this guy before. He comes in and he basically occupies a whole table for himself.
Yes, he gets upset if somebody uses his table too. Right. His table, not
right. Know. So he comes in every day. He uses up a table. He never checks out a book. He just uses the free Wi-Fi for whatever it is he's doing.
Right.
And he sets up a little fort, you know, in the back on the table with his little fans and his notebooks and his all this stuff. And
right.
And then thinks that he can get you to do something about the temperature by saying he won't come in.
I know. And it's really, the temperature is not anything. I have no power over it. You know, I can't like turn down the thermostat or anything. It's, you know,
it's set. Yeah.
It's beyond my control.
Yeah.
But he said, I'm not coming in until 1 o'clock.
Okay. How about you don't come in until after 5?
I looked him straight in the face. I said, well, or you could just stay home all day. And he says, well, I don't have Wi-Fi at home.
Well,
and that's when I, you know, who has free Wi-Fi and you don't have to pay anything to use it. And it's nicely air conditioned.
Oh, you sent him Starbucks? Awesome.
Nice.
No, so somebody suggested that on my Facebook, and I was like, oh my God. So tomorrow, when he comes in at 9 o'clock, I'm going to say, you know what? Now that they've changed the rules, you can just go to Starbucks and sit there all day. And use
you don't have to buy anything.
And it has air conditioning.
Yep.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, he's not going to do it.
Why not?
He likes to complain.
Yeah. Well, he can complain to the baristas.
But he likes complaining to you.
Yeah, I know. I don't know why. I'm not nice. I'm not like, I don't humor him at all. I don't give a shit. some guy this past week was complaining about his wife. Like, I've heard this complaint about his wife all the time. Like, you know, I've heard this complaint a number of times, and he's always whining about his wife and how his wife treats the dogs better than she treats him. And I flat out looked at him and I said, you know what? You should probably get a divorce. You're that unhappy. Get a divorce. And he stuttered. He didn't know what to say. I'm not your captive audience, buddy. Anyway, there you go. Library story.
That's great. And I seem to recall a Snotman sighting too.
Yes, Snotman reappeared this last week. Oh my gosh. He didn't sign in to use the computer, but he used the computer. But I saw him and he was in and out like in a flash. But I was like, oh my gosh. It's like, you know, seeing Sasquatch.
There's been sighting.
Maybe his maybe his Wi-Fi was down at his house. I don't know.
He's tired of Boxman coming by his house and sitting.
Oh my God.
There you go. Yeah. Hit patrons against each other.
Oh,
say, hey,
brilliant.
I hear this guy has an unguarded Wi-Fi connection. You should park in front of his house and steal his Wi-Fi.
Brilliant. Jay, you're
download,
genius.
Download the Anarchist Cookbook while you're there.
Yeah.
It's like bum fights only with patrons.
who in a lot of cases are actually bums.
Yeah, we have one guy right now. We do have kind of a real hobo. I think he lives kind of like in a halfway house or like a, like, what are they called? The room, boarding house kind of place.
Boarding house.
But he spends all day at the library. So, and all he does all day is like take phone calls on his cell phone, which I'm sick of hearing your ringtone, buddy.
Wait. He's
read the newspaper.
He's homeless, but he has a cell phone.
I'm telling you, everybody has a cell phone and data plans. Everybody. Yeah.
Man.
So, he just reads the newspapers over and over. We have like two local newspapers and USA Today and the Wall Street Journal. And he just all day long comes to the desk and asks for a different newspaper.
They still print newspapers?
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I haven't. Okay. Can we change it up a little bit?
Go.
I want to hear about your fire pit.
Ah, speaking of patrons that won't leave you alone, how's that fire pit doing?
Well, it kind of went with the Memorial Day thing and the grilling of meat. The fire pit is really awesome. For the longest time, I have wanted to kind of learn how to cook over fire, you know, like put things in the coals and roast things and Dutch oven things. And, you know, my goal is to like maybe like hang a chicken over the coals and kind of, you know, cook a chicken that way. And, you know, because I've seen it on cooking shows and stuff. But so we had a friend come over this past weekend. And he helped Mike dig a fire pit, and like an actual fire pit, like in the ground with stones and then a fire ring and then stones around that. And then I have like a grilling grate that cooks, you know, it goes over the fire. And we did steaks, but I wasn't really, they were good, but they were overcooked because we didn't cook them hot enough and fast enough. So I'm thinking more coals and lower grate next time. And we did like, here's the thing that I did. I did this is kind of fun, and Jay, it kind of goes with your hummus thing. But do you know what baba ganoush is? Baba ganoush.
I've heard the word. I've heard it. I've heard it on like Seinfeld or something, but not, I don't know what it is.
Baba ganoush is like a dip made out of roasted eggplant and garlic and lemon juice and olive oil and sea salt. It's very simple, but it's really good. And I made some, and the way you make it is you take a whole eggplant, and people have been asking for more recipes on the Squirrel Wart Facebook page. And so here's an easy recipe. So you take a whole eggplant and you wash it really good and you throw it in the fire. And you pull it out when the skin and the outside is really charred. And then you cut it in half and you scoop out the inside and you mash it up with garlic and olive oil and a little lemon juice and sea salt. And you have baba ganoush. And it's a really nice dip.
As nice as hummus?
What do you dip into it? Like potato chips or something? Or what?
Sure. Potato chips, pita chips.
Library patrons.
Crackers, vegetables, whatever. It's good. So, anyway.
Severed patron fingers.
You know. I would like everybody to, if you're on the Facebook page, the Squirrel Port Facebook page, and if you're not, you should be, because it's really great and interactive with the show. I really love that aspect, how it's people listen to the show and they talk on the Facebook page.
The group, you know, not the page.
The group. The Facebook group. There's a page and there's a group.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. but.
Because the page is just, honestly, I don't even know why it's there.
Well, it just links to the show, right?
Yeah. That's all it is.
Yeah. But if anybody listening on the page can maybe give me some cooking in the fire tips, anything you know, any recipes, you know. That would be great because I'm just starting out and I'm not an expert at cooking stuff over open flame. So help me. Open flame and coals, I guess, right?
You should have been a Boy Scout.
I know. You both are Boy Scouts. So what, you cook things over fires,
Dutch
right?
Oven pizza.
Yeah, I don't know how it was in your troop, Jay, but in my troop, people got very competitive about what they could cook. It was like every patrol tried to outdo every other patrol, and not just in the taste, you know, this is really good, but the extravagant method of cooking over the fire. Yeah. You know, we had guys, you know, the reflector oven for baking was like standard. You know, you set the reflector oven in front of the fire and you cook biscuits in it or whatever, and that was really common. Cobblers, man, if you could do a good cobbler, you were like a god at Boy Scout camp.
Okay.
Dutch oven cobbler was like the thing. Oh man, what did we do? We made crullers. The fried dough things, and then you put sugar on them and stuff.
Like beignets?
I don't know what that is.
Beignets, like a donut.
Yeah, sort of. It's like a donut. You take some dough, you twist it, and drop it in a vat of boiling oil, and then it cooks, and you take it out, and you put whatever your sugary thing you want on top of it.
Do you have any recipes that I can eat? No.
Oh yeah, there's all kinds of stuff.
It don't involve bread.
Well.
No,
it's really a lot of, I mean, almost anything you can cook over a fire. You just have to change how you do it a little bit because it's not an oven. It's a, there's some things you can't,
right.
You can't do because you're doing it on a fire. But, back to that show you were talking about before, I remember there was one about the coal and the switch from a wood fire stove. Mm-hmm. To a coal fire stove, and how they had to change
right. The
way they made food because you can no longer with coal, you can't have the food mix with the smoke because it makes it taste awful. Well, one of the great things about cooking over a fire is you get the smoke in it and it helps, mm-hmm. It makes everything taste delicious. So no pine. Hardwoods only.
Right.
Yeah. Everything tastes like pitch.
Yeah.
Tastes like Christmas. Gross.
So you have three basic cooking methods over a fire. You have what is essentially a Dutch oven of some sort where you put something in the giant iron.
I'm going to have to get one of those. Yeah.
Right. And then you pile coals around it, and that makes it sort of like an oven, but it's still a little different. Mostly because
like a slow cooker kind of.
Yeah. You don't have much control over the heat because coals are a temperature. So the coals, they don't really vary in temperature. They have a set temperature. So
you have a setting and it's high.
Yeah. And you can add more heat, but you can't really increase the temperature beyond whatever the temperature of the coals is. So it's not like you can turn the oven up to 450 or something like that. It's just whatever the temperature of the coals are. And you learn how to take that temperature by how close you can get your hand for how long. So that's, you have to get pretty good at like, ouch. Okay. That's, that is a certain temperature. then there's cooking things in a pot over the fire, and you can actually cook if you're cooking in like a stew or something like that. You can do that over the fire itself. You don't have to wait for coals. You just soap up the bottom of your pan and just let it sit on the flame because you're basically boiling water. So,
right,
that's no big deal.
Okay.
And the third thing is like basically roasting meat over the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Like with a spit or a stick. We used to use green sticks and you stick your meat, whether it's a hot dog or a steak or whatever, you just shove the stick through it. You kind of hold it over the fire and let it cook. I don't know. You got anything to add, Jay? I'm about at my limit.
pretty much covered it. I mean, you've got, direct, indirect, and oven.
Right.
There's all kinds of different, it's a lot like, much like the Dutch oven itself is cast iron, and the cast iron itself has its own, rituals.
Right.
I mean, there's some that feel you need to dig a hole and fill the hole with hot coals, put the oven in, and then cover it over with more coals to direct the heat.
Right.
It's pretty much endless. I've always been a fan of putting something on a stick and roasting it over the fire.
Yeah, that works really good. That's so actually surprisingly good. You can cook all kinds of stuff like that. And then there's always the vegetables in foil in the coals.
Yep. We've done that. The foil packs.
Right. Exactly.
You can actually do a chicken breast.
Yeah, those work great.
Vegetables and cut up potatoes. As long as you have, we use like a French onion soup to kind of coat everything, and that prevents it from getting too burnt on any one side.
Right.
You just kind of put it in and
put a few layers of foil around it, and then and then shove it in the coals.
Again, that's, you know, you're creating your own oven, essentially. It's a little tiny one.
That actually works pretty good. Because coals, you know, it's funny, coals actually insulate too. Coals will, like snow. Yeah, coals will protect your food from getting too hot in the fire. You've seen the whole fire walking thing, right? Where people walk across a hot bed of coals.
Oh yeah.
Because coals have heat and they are hot, but they also insulate, so they don't transfer heat very quickly, which is why it's so useful to cook in a bed of coals, because there's a lot of heat there, but it's all pretty much one temperature, and
it's slow.
It doesn't.
You're cooking by convection, right? Essentially,
yeah. You're not gonna. Your conduction is almost non-existent with coals. So unlike the fire, which will burn the shit out of something,
right?
So,
Well, I have a big learning curve here. I mean, I understand kind of the general concept, but you know, it's just the doing of it. Like I said, the steaks were good, but cooked a little bit too much because I think we could cook them too slow.
Yeah, it was probably too slow and too far away. You didn't get the good searing on the outside. And
right.
One of our favorite things we used to show the new scouts was when we were going out was boiling water in a paper cup. That was always fun. Over the fire, you just take a grate like you have, Rita, and put it over the fire so the fire's like coming up through it. And take a paper cup full of water and set it on there, and the water will boil and the paper cup won't burn where the water's touching it.
Right.
Oh.
Right.
Because the boiling temperature of water is lower than the combustion temperature of paper. So as long as there's water.
239 degrees?
Something like that, yeah. So as long as there's water touching the paper won't get hot enough to burn.
Right.
So the water will sit there and boil. It's a fun trick.
Oh, Ronan.
No.
No, that was my chair.
Oh.
A squeaky chair.
I heard a squeak and just naturally assumed someone was hungry.
Yeah.
Well,
that's a safe assumption.
So what else is going on in the world?
Well, we have to talk about Roseanne.
Okay.
And more than talking about Roseanne is the perennial, and I thought about whether to call this the double standard, the liberal double standard, but really to them, it's not a double standard. It's the same. They have the same standard,
right?
You're either one of them or you're not. And if you're not, there's nothing you can do that is right. And that's the problem that a lot of conservatives turn into, because they say something that is not that big a deal, or they say something that every liberal has said. And then the liberals get all bent out of shape, and then the conservatives apologize. Big mistake. You don't win. You never win by apologizing, because you're admitting you were wrong when you do that. And there is no right or wrong. You're wrong as far as they're concerned. So you don't win anything by giving in to them. So anyway, I just thought it was funny that in the midst of apparent ambient induced Twitter fest, that she said something that is on par and certainly no worse than anything any liberal ever said about Monkey McBush Hitler.
Right.
Chimpy McHitler.
Yeah.
Well, you're allowed to call white people chimpanzees, but apparently you're not allowed to call black people chimpanzees.
I'm not sure. Valerie Jarrett, is she black? Because she's from Iran.
I thought she was part black. No,
she might be, but I know she's from Iran.
Whatever. She's not white.
Everybody mad.
Tony is Googling. Oh God.
Yeah. Well,
is she black?
Iran part comes from, she was born in Iran because her parents were stationed there, you know, like, or not stationed. They happened to be in Iran when she was born, you know, like I've got a very good friend who is Panamanian because his dad was in the army and stationed in Panama when he was born.
Okay. So her parents were American and they were over there and she was born in Iran.
Right, right. Yeah, you know, it was a stupid thing to say. Plain and simple.
Sure. You know? And frankly, you know, no one should, come on, you know.
Right.
If you want to have a conversation about Valerie Jarrett, there are lots of things that you can talk about with Valerie Jarrett.
Yes.
Aside from calling her names like that. So.
Right. Exactly. And again.
Oh, know. I wanted to mention today, and I forgot to mention this, but with the Valerie Jarrett thing, Mike told me that he works with a lot of kind of millennials in his office, and they all get like little Yahoo News or like Google News updates on their phone, right? And so they got these updates about Roseanne calling Valerie Jarrett some sort of racist name, and oh, the big scandal, and oh, Roseanne kind of just destroyed her career, blah, blah, blah. And so Mike said to, you know, one of the guys that he works with, he said something about, oh, well, Valerie Jarrett, she's so terrible. And, you know, you know, that's like not really one of the most horrible things you could say about Valerie Jarrett. And everybody, all these young 20 something men in the office said, who's Valerie Jarrett?
Yeah.
So that, no, it's just an interesting look at how the news works. Like they're all upset about, you know, Roseanne ruining her career and this racist comment, blah blah blah, but they had no idea who Valerie Jarrett was.
Right.
Really?
Well, she was very much a behind the scenes kind of a person.
Well, if you paid half attention to the Obama administration, Valerie Jarrett made an appearance.
I mean, come on.
I know, but still.
It would be very easy to be oblivious to Valerie Jarrett's existence if you were of a certain age.
Well, right. And also following, you know, the media. Because that you only know what they show you, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that ABC and, you know, which is pronounced Disney, immediately, like within hours, canceled her show and fired her.
Mm.
And yet, Joy Reid. She still has a show.
A lot of people still have shows. A lot of liberal people still have shows.
But she said some really awful things on Twitter and then tried to claim that, oh, well, my account was hacked.
Oh, is that the excuse now?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So she had a lot of anti-gay posts and she's done a lot of like 9/11 truther stuff and all this like really crazy stuff, but that's fine because, you know, she's
black.
It's not that she's black. She's a liberal, you know. I mean, you know, if a black Republican said that stuff, they'd get probably thrown in jail or something. You can't have that.
Well, who is this comedian? Samantha Bee.
Oh, I have no idea who that is.
Well, I mean, it just came out today that this comedian, I don't even know what she is. That's the thing. I don't watch TV, so I have no idea who the hell this person is. Samantha Bee came out and called Ivanka Trump a really terrible word.
Yes. And not only that, implied that she and her father are having an incestuous relationship.
Right. But Samantha Bee is getting an award this week.
Right. From the Television Academy.
Wow.
This is the same group that does the Emmy Awards.
Yeah.
She's being lauded for her show's contributions to social change, whatever the hell that is.
Apparently she's getting more minorities bicycles.
Yeah, I don't know. I saw this. I was like, who the fuck is Samantha Bee? I don't know who that is. These people, I don't. Am I just getting old? Is that
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not paying it. Haven't watched broadcast TV. I was having a conversation with my daughter and she mentioned something about some commercial and I was like, man, I haven't watched commercials in it's been years. I don't remember the last time I watched a commercial on TV. It's crazy. The only commercials I see are those stupid YouTube ads you can't turn off for 5 seconds. That's it. That's all I ever see.
Oh no, I have to wait 5 seconds.
Yeah, it's very irritating. Seconds. And you know what infuriates me even worse are the ones you can't turn off. It's like your thing will start and you know what? Oh, I'm gonna rant now. Those you see a lot of these on Facebook where it's like a video that starts playing and then like 10 seconds in they show an interstitial ad that you can't skip or anything and I'm like, nope, cancel. You know, I won't even watch the damn ad to see what the rest of the video is. I'm just like, nope. Crazy. I won't watch an ad. I don't. I would pay money to not have to watch ads. I would literally pay money.
But
I don't like ads.
Okay.
It's a waste of my time.
I have ad blocker. I don't even know what ads are anymore.
Oh yeah, I have all that. Like I said, the only time I see ads are when they're embedded in a video and I can't skip them or something.
Isn't it funny to like go on a computer that doesn't have an ad blocker?
Yeah, it's insane. You go to like Drudge like, or something and you're like, what the hell is this?
This is not the way I'm used to. And you're like, yeah. Oh, that's there's 850 million ads.
Yeah. Yeah.
I kind of like the ads though that I get on Facebook. You know, Facebook will show you ads for, you know, things that they think you're interested in.
Yeah, but I always
get like a
weird.
Really, really weird selection of shit on my Facebook.
Yeah, it's like bizarre stuff. Like I got an ad for some like it was some sort of like industrial machine, some like assembly line industrial machinery that I would have absolutely no use for, but it's like Facebook was like, oh, you might be interested in this. I'm like, no, not really.
I'm like, teens are ditching Facebook, study confirms. Oh, well, yeah. Thanks for telling us about 3 years ago.
Yeah, my daughter almost never uses Facebook. She's 17.
What do they use?
They use
they don't tell them.
Yeah, they don't tell us. They use a lot of Snapchat. Use a lot of Snapchat.
Twitter is actually big with my son and his friends. They're all on Twitter and Instagram. Instagram is pretty big.
You know what I think happened is that when social media first appeared, everybody was like so excited. Like, oh, I can make friends and I can talk to people and I can find all, you know, blah, 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 social media. And I think at the end of the day, people just don't want to know that many people.
Yeah.
No.
At the end of the day, you're tired of people.
Yeah, man. Seriously.
You're trying to collect them so you can use them in some fashion.
Right. Exactly.
They're like Pokemon.
Right. It gets monetized and then it gets ruined.
Right.
Yeah.
You're trying to market yourself to them. I saw somebody posted something where some cheesy author was like friended them and immediately tried to start like marketing their book to them.
I saw that. Yeah.
It was like, dude, you've been friends with me for exactly 4 seconds and you're already trying to push your shitty book on me. What the hell? And then the dude got violent and was like verbally abusive to him and started cussing at him and everything in Messenger, which is like really funny because, you know, delete, block, you know, screen cap. I mean, it's, yeah. Crazy people. Oh, look,
it's 9 o'clock.
It's 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock. That was quick.
It's 8 o'clock.
9 o'clock.
You're out here where it matters, it's 9.
Well, it's 9 o'clock for me and it's 9 o'clock for Jay, so.
So the majority of us are at 9 o'clock.
But this isn't a democracy. Yep.
What is the past like?
We're living in the future, Jay.
That's right. That's us, Brita. We're forward thinkers.
Yeah, we're ahead of time. You know what? I tell you what. Let me know what the lottery numbers.
What are. The lottery numbers are,
and I'll go buy a ticket before it hits.
We'll finally solve our hosting woes. Pay all of our exorbitant fines.
You know, if I ever bothered to actually play the lottery, which will be almost never, and if I ever actually won, the last thing I would do is to continue doing a podcast.
Yes, you would. Oh my God,
you'd just be doing it from your yacht somewhere. Somewhere out in the cave off the Caymans.
This is the yacht report.
The
the rich bastard report.
This is now the Ermine report, not the school.
Oh boy.
Yes.
Yeah. We're doing a podcast from a different exotic automobile every week.
That would be, don't they do that? Isn't that like some Top Gear or something? That's pretty much what they do, right?
Pretty much.
Man.
You could,
that would be fun. That'd be almost as good as Jay's job, to get paid to like drive an exotic car and talk about it every week.
It would be pretty damn cool. I spent the whole afternoon shooting guns long range. That was fun. So.
And got paid to do it.
I got paid to do it. Yes.
Nice.
There's hundreds of Squirrel Report listeners that are profoundly jealous of you right now, Jay.
Yes, unfortunately, I can't talk about some of it because it's not released yet, but it's cool. And you'll hear about it. Awesome. And the 224 Valkyrie is believe the hype.
Oh yeah.
That's all I'm going to say.
Spoilers.
I'm going to say spoiler alert. 224 Valkyrie is awesome. I need one. So
isn't that the round that they made that there's no gun for yet or something?
No, there's a few. Savage being part of the conglomeration that owns Federal Vista, they have a couple of Savage models in 224 Valkyrie, and then there's mainly smaller companies have been adopting it. It's really an upper change. It's a little more involved than 300 Blackout in that you do need a 6.8 SPC bolt, and it runs on 6.8 SPC magazines. But basically, if you've got a standard 223 lower, you can buy a 224 upper.
So,
or complete upper.
I'm sorry, Brita. I'm going to make Jay.
We're gun geeking.
I'm going to make Jay explain what the hell the 224 Valkyrie is supposed to do.
And now I'm talking about work.
Yeah, I know that. But. You're gonna,
spoil it.
But you brought it up, so what the hell?
Yeah, I did.
So we already have the 6.8 SPC, and we already have the 223, and we already have the 308. And what does the 224 Valkyrie bring to the table that the other existing cartridges don't? I mean, it's basically a goofy Wildcat cartridge.
What it brings is it's a much flatter shooting cartridge. It is still supersonic at 1,300 yards.
Okay, so it's basically like a 223 with more powder behind it.
Exactly. That is exactly what it is.
Does it need a longer barrel, or does it use a faster burning powder?
It does make the most of its power in like a 24 inch barrel.
Okay, yeah. So it does need a longer barrel.
Yeah. You're going to lose a bit if you put it in a 16 inch carbine. Okay. It's kind of silly. But it's interesting. I look forward to taking one out to 1,000 yards and playing with it.
So we're one step beyond turning prairie dogs into red mist.
Pretty much. Well, the great thing about the 224 Valkyrie is you can do it from even further away.
All right, then.
So, but yeah, stay tuned. There'll be some cool stuff coming.
I look forward to reading more about it in a certain publication.
A certain publication. Yes, thank you. All right, we will see you next week. Same squirrel time, same squirrel channel.
That's right. Everybody have a good weekend.
Okay.
Bye.
Good night, everybody. Bye.